Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hey everyone, I'm John Lynn, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today, and we're excited to bring you another in our series of interviews with top leaders in health IT. And our guest today is Jason Worlman. He's global director of healthcare at UiPath. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for the opportunity to join your show today.
Yeah, I think UiPath, I would say a little under the radar in healthcare as far as everything that you're accomplishing and all the automation you're doing. So excited to help our audience learn more about you. So start us off. Tell us a little bit about yourself and UiPath.
So I lead our global healthcare practice at UiPath. My role at UiPath is really to help the organization understand where the value is within our healthcare organizations, whether you're a provider, payer, life sciences, in every region of the world. And help our customers really understand the value of our platform, not only to adopt it and scale it, but as I like to say, break it, because breaking technology makes us innovate and really come up with some really game-changing innovations that really move the needle within our healthcare business.
Interesting. Well, healthcare loves to break stuff because they like to be their own, you know, pretty little snowflake that has unique workflows and privacy requirements.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure you've had that experience before with healthcare. You know, UiPath has been doing automation forever. I mean, that's core to what you do. How is AI kind of taking things to a new level for you?
Yeah, so, you know, UiPath has always had AI as a part of our tenet. I would argue that it's not a new thing for our organization. It's just the way that we approach it. So whereas a lot of AI in the market, when you look at what organizations are doing, the hyperscales are doing, it's really about data-generated AI, very prescriptive models that say, here's some historical information. Can I figure out what to do next? It could be a patient's journey. It could be diagnosing a chronic disease. It could be looking out and making sure there's safety and controls around a patient. That is how AI is typically looked at. The way we've always looked at AI is how can we use that to optimize processes, which is a little bit different, right? So when you say, okay, well, can I have an AI model that creates an outcome that predicts if I'm going to get paid by this payer? That's not the AI models we look at. The AI models we look at is, can I take that payer's website or that payer's appeal or more denial and then extract it, figure out what to do with it, and then auto appeal and then resubmit back to the payer. So the models are more about optimizing processes than figuring out analytics from a data set. And that's we've been doing that for several years now. So when Gen AI came around, it just became a natural fit into our current program.
That is a different mindset, right? Like trying to use AI to get insights from data versus saying, how can AI and automation automate this process that I'm sick of doing redundantly over and over, which every biller, every front desk person in healthcare is
absolutely
doing, right?
Yeah. If you think about your computer on a daily basis, every click you do on your mouse and every keystroke you do on your keyboard, it's a data point, right? AI is about taking data and then producing some sort of outcome that allows us to accelerate the end objective. If I'm not looking at patient data or clinical data, we're looking at keyboard stroke data and mouse click data. And that's really the differentiation. So the outcome is different, but it's still AI at the end of the day.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And you're modeling the person that's doing the actual action rather than
exactly.
Trying to guess what should be done that's not being done.
Exactly. Exactly. Very different way of definitely looking at it.
Yeah. When you look at the healthcare automations and your healthcare customers, how much of those automations are doing kind of classic automation stuff versus AI, you know, because I hear, you know, AI's marketers corrupt everything and they corrupt the term AI. Yeah, you know, I claim that because I run a marketing conference, right? Okay. You know, talk to us, you know, what, how much of it really is just classic automation, not really AI versus AI? And,
sure.
You know, and I guess for me, I look at it and say, well, to, the magic is kind of packaging the two together. But what do you see, you know, with people actually implementing?
What's interesting is you go into a lot of organizations, especially people that are building these solutions, and they say that they're IA and not AI, intelligent automation, not artificial intelligence, because they are packaging those two together. But going back to the original question, I would say that probably it's still 80-20.
Yeah.
And the reality is I always like to say automation can be very innovative, but it could also be very practical. And within healthcare, which you've been in many years, John, we still need a lot of practical solutions, because in healthcare, we live by exception. We are a very special snowflake, and I don't want to necessarily put that from a technology perspective, but technology is built around the journey of the patient. Every patient's different. Every journey is different, meaning the workflows need to be different, meaning the data consumption is going to be different. So that means there's a lot of gray area in everything we do that requires some element of standardization or improvement. And that's where a lot of organizations use solutions like automation or UiPath. I could be in one health system and have a whole gap of care that they're automating in a very practical way. It could be, I need to transform data from my PAC system to my RIS system, because I've got radiologists spending 6 hours a day doing duplicate entry. That's not AI. That's using automation to solve interoperability. Those sort of use cases are still abound across all levels of healthcare and still capsize the majority of use cases. However, as systems have become more complicated, the use of more advanced ways or techniques of getting there is important. And that's where I think the AI starts to come into play, because now it's not as easy as copy and paste. Now it's copy, audit, transform, generate, and then create. And that's where you start to see intelligence come into some of this automation to solve maybe some of these real practical issues that weren't possible a few years ago.
I mean, you're highlighting something I've seen a lot, which is there's so many issues with healthcare. We don't need AI yet.
Yeah. There's always beneficial. Something. I was with a customer yesterday. He's been with us for 3 years, and they were celebrating the success of implementing 15 robots. And every single one of those use cases I would classify as 2019 practical use cases, things that are almost low-hanging fruit, but they just started last year.
Yeah.
And it's still a massive success for them. And that's really exciting. There aren't too many technologies where 1 to 2 years after it comes to market, the original idea of that product is still extremely valuable on the hype curve. And fortunately for UiPath, we're still on that very low end of the beginning of the hype curve for a lot of hospital systems.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So talk to us about what are some of the areas you see healthcare leveraging UiPath to automate tasks? What are some of the common use cases that people should say, oh, I haven't automated that, but I should?
So the average healthcare system right now has somewhere around 300 to 400 use cases that they identify over the first 3 years of their journey. Now, even though the technology has a very low barrier to entry into building those automation, you still need people. It's not necessarily the technology that takes a long time to implement, because it doesn't. It's having the people to be able to look at the process, re-engineer the process, optimize the process. You don't want to put, you know, you don't want to take a bad process and optimize it. There's value in doing that short term while you innovate, but you just don't do it and forget it. So there's always you need people in a center of excellence. You need subject matter experts. So that slows down the rate of that return.
There's probably a lot of stakeholder buy-in as well that they have to do before the change happens.
Well, a lot of times they're coupling it with a resource management program. Right now, every hospital system, every payer, workforce challenges. We have over 100,000 people in every region that they can't find. So they're going through these big workforce transformation programs. Automation becomes a key piece of that. So the areas that they're really focused on right now you know, and I would say if you asked me this 2 years ago, I would have said revenue cycle management, but that was more focused on areas around cash acceleration, payer to provider interoperability. Now we're seeing a second wave, which is more around revenue integrity. Can I improve my billing cycles? Can I ensure my charge captures correctly? Can I make sure that all my clinical documentation at the point of authorization is happening? These use cases were probably secondary because they weren't heavily productivity based. They were heavy, more quality based. So our CFOs are now saying, let's focus less on productivity and let's more focus on quality because quality will improve my revenue integrity. So we're seeing a large kind of re-interest in that area where they already have a lot of automation and now they're moving to put more just to handle those more complex use cases, especially when it comes to documentation. UiPath has a Gartner right corner best in class intelligent document processing suite. My healthcare organizations actually put more attention in now automating documents in these spaces than they do actually traditional digital robots, because I can implement them in half the time and get instant return. So you're thinking of denial letters and then immediate appeal letters, right? Being able to analyze charts up front to look for charge capture items. So those things produce more revenue, especially in a time when denials are up by 41% for clinical outcomes. And as you know, through CMS, right, they're looking to reduce the Medicare rates by 3%. So there's a lot of pressure to maximize the amount of money they're getting and keeping it as much as possible. So revenue cycle management is definitely key, front, middle, back. The other areas we're seeing a lot of interest, there's always HR. So the CHRO, it is, right? We have workforce challenges. They're doing these large resource management programs. So they're looking and saying, how quick can I onboard somebody? How quick can I identify the right candidate? When I identify the right candidate, can I credential them to know all the skills they have correctly? They might come in as a phlebotomist today, but they could be a first line nurse tomorrow. They have the criteria. We just need to give them a little upskilling to get them there. That stuff is really hard to initially identify, but now you have iSIMS and you have different products like Workday doing that analytics. So robots can actually do a lot of that front and back work and pull that together and alert and say, okay, well, Jason actually is qualified to do this. I think he should be at that job tomorrow. All the way down to the onboarding prospect. Last year, there was a nutrition report that came out. So a lot of healthcare workers were leaving the practice they were in because they joined it 90 days later. They didn't even have access to their EMR to practice. So, you know, all of that is very administrative. So, you know, a lot of people are surprised when I say focus on the HR area as a part of the program. It's absolutely coming back now because people's experience is what keeps them in the hospital system, right? Supply chain, naturally, that's coming still off of COVID. There's a lot of challenges there still. A lot of people use third-party PO vendors. Now they're getting more diverse and they're not centralizing their supply chain efforts. They're now spreading it across multiple vendors, and that creates a lot of complication around purchase orders, invoices, emails, audits. So automation is essential there. I think a lot of people would consider that bread and butter. The area that we're seeing the most hyper growth in now is really relieving administrative burdens within the clinical workflows. So maybe not necessarily the primary care physician, because as soon as you start making decisions for primary care physicians, you start to get into this world of medical devices. You know, we were just talking about this earlier, right? Medical devices, they help create workflow analytics. You know, the FDA has very specific guidelines around it. Automation is not a medical device. It's not designed to be a medical device. You never want to make a decision for a clinician, and we don't. But it doesn't mean that I can't take some of the burdensome administrative tasks that are now sitting on the PCP or on the charge nurse or on an administrator and then automate that 30% of the way, 50% of the way, 80% of the way, and keep them human in the loop. So where you see a lot of that back office automation, some people would call it unattended, we're now seeing the move to more desktop automation. Orchestration of process automation, And even more digital assistant automation. You know, we just started, you know, we have this strong point of view. We've created this amazing product called Autopilot that takes desktop automation, AI, and fuses it together so that you can create these experiences. So when you start looking at that front level, you know, you look at, you know, people that work in EMRs like Cerner or Epic, they have in-baskets. Some organizations are getting millions of these in-basket items every day.
Yep.
The doctors want to work on the ones that are critical, but a huge percentage of those are system generated, provider generated. It's important, but the end outcome is something administrative. Set up an appointment, send an email, schedule a test, reach out to the patient. That stuff can be highly automated. It doesn't fall into the FDA problem area of being a medical device and can alleviate 2 to 3 hours of, you know, non-critical work time by administrators. So those areas right now are quickly becoming the sweet spot for most of our healthcare customers. And that's the provider side. I would say on the health plan side, it's more on anything that we consider audit, utilization management, fraud, risk, and abuse. Auditors spend 2 to 3 hours a day looking through all those documents to determine valid, not valid. And I'm not talking about the auto adjudication stuff that's super easy. I'm talking about the really complex stuff that normally holds up our quality of care. Can I now do the audit and then turn the auditor into a validator? You know, cutting that time from 2 hours to 20 minutes with a high level of accuracy, but still giving the human the ability to make the decision of the end outcome. Yeah. So those areas, I would say maybe a year and a half ago, not only was it too difficult for an automation platform to conclude, but, you know, it just wasn't a appetite by healthcare leaders. Now it's a whole different game, you know, last year going into this year.
Well, it's interesting, the acceptance of automation. I heard one CIO say before, they were like, are you taking away my job? Now they're like, please do it because I'm doing three people's jobs. So that's a big change. What's interesting, you know, and we deal mostly with the provider side of things, but when I was hearing you describe those different areas, I'm like, who is the customer for UiPath, right? Because, you know, the revenue cycle is the revenue cycle manager, the CFO, right? Whereas the clinical is the CMO and the CMIO and the CIO, and, you know, the HR is the HR director. And like, you kind of have the challenge that GIS had. I don't know if you know geospatial stuff, where it's like everyone could use it, but who's going to own it, right? Do you have that same problem, or how do you see it kind of entering into healthcare organizations? There's one strong advocate and then it grows, or how does that work?
It's an excellent question. So this is where UiPath differentiates when you say, is it a tool or a platform? Because a tool is owned by one person, typically a CIO or a CTO, right? When you're a platform, the question is who is the strategic leader who is putting the budget forth to acquire it at the enterprise level? So when you think of it as the platform, the way it is with a lot of our healthcare leaders, most of the time, it is a CFO or CEO, because they're budgetary discretion for just about everything, right? But who actually owns the execution tends to be a CIO or a CNIO. And they typically, when they build these programs, they do it in collaboration. So normally it's a hub and spoke model. You have a centralized team who owns the whole innovation automation program. And it just doesn't include UiPath. It could include new Gen AI. It could include advanced analytics. Their job is to say, how can I innovate with these platforms, with UiPath typically being the basis of innovation, and then solve executive leader problems that are a part of their RKOs for the year, right? So it's like CFO works with the CIO, who works with the CTO, who's working with CHRO, and it becomes this executive initiative to drive. And I wouldn't say it's always been that way, but we've seen a large movement towards that direction, probably in the last 12 to 14 months within healthcare systems and hospitals, who've now seen this as more of a necessity, because you're right, there's not enough people to go around. Leaders are now taking the roles of administrators, you know, primary care physicians are taking the role of charge nurses are taking roles of administrators, because in healthcare, there is no such thing as backlog. right? It improves quality of care. So it's now become a strategic initiative. So it could work differently in different organizations. You might be different from an outpatient to an inpatient center.
Sure.
But typically that's who we see. So when I go in and talk to executives about innovation, automation, it's normally the whole C-suite and not one specific executive.
Interesting. You know, you gave us a good view into some of the areas you're automating. It's fascinating. There's 300 to 400, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. We all know that. Mm-hmm. Are there areas of healthcare that haven't been automated yet that you think, you know, are on that horizon that could be automated soon?
So there's some very, you know, typically you look at data heavy places of automation, clinical quality control is an area. I was just on with a customer who actually started there, and I gave them huge props for that because very data intrinsic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I need my data to be good before I can actually use automation to take an actual vested next step. So as organizations improve their data management or their data aggregation, whether it's through the fire end operability or consolidating EMRs, data quality control, risk and compliance, contracting, areas like imaging, right, and laboratory, where it's very data driven and heavy data interoperability driven, the better we get from a data integration point there, the better the automation is going to be. Because, you know, automation is a great executor. And if the data isn't great, you can't really point it to take that next step. So those are areas that are really, I would say, growth in the health system. I always say, if you want to see some unique use cases that might not be in your current book of business, you look at the ologies, right? Because they tend to have some really unique, challenging use cases that as the platforms get smarter, the automation becomes more and more available to you. So those are some key areas that just really don't have a lot of heavy influence right now, especially as it comes to like the revenue cycle management space, right? Labs, imaging. I mean, that's the moneymaker for most hospital systems. And it's not an easy thing to authorize. It's not an easy thing to bill. There's a lot of denials around it, but there's a lot of money around it, right? So that's where, you know, we're starting to see some glide paths as well. You're solving some of my revenue integrity issues. Now, can you solve this problem I have with my PAC system not integrating? Or can you solve this issue with my lab or doing assay testing? Or could I look at the pharmacy now? We're trying to run an opioid program and we need to be alerted or something needs to happen far in advance before we accidentally give an opioid to somebody that could abuse it. These processes are in place. They may even have AI models to predict, but it just doesn't work fast enough because they have 6 pieces of technology between it to get to the end outcome. So they're like, well, now I can take automation, eliminate those 6 pieces of technology and do it real time. So those are places that we're starting to see some real movement in.
It's interesting. It's almost like UiPath likes the 6 pieces of technology. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's harder to automate, but you know, in some ways you know, that's where you shine.
The reality is a lot of the technologies that healthcare has in place, and arguably most health systems have 300 to 400 pieces of technology. Yeah. I always say, if you want to look at where you can reduce costs in the system, look at the middleware you have inside your business. UiPath by no means is middleware, right? That's not its role. Its role, sure. You would never consider a human middleware. If you consider a human middleware, that's the middle, that's a mean low-hanging fruit, uh-huh. You know, for automation. But if you have middleware technology, automation, and where the complexity of technology is today can actually replace and enhance most middleware products because it has a very essential piece built in. It's quality management. Most middleware products, they exchange, they transfer. They don't check. Mm. So if you talk to healthcare leaders who are doing very operational back office work, they'll say there's a high volume of work that reaches to them that should have never reached to them. And because the reason is the middleware is moving data between A and B and has no quality check system. It has rule systems to make sure that some things are done. So it's like a blank form doesn't come through, a field is missing. But how did you make sure that EDI translation was correct? as it goes into SAP, or was that X12 correct before it goes into Epic? You know, there's some quality checks and loading information that needs to be done, and it misses that quality aspect. So a lot of organizations are saying, do I need all these different applications to do this work downstream, when I could just put a few robots in the middle and do all that work in one turn? So it's a little bit of a different way of thinking about it, but you know, we really like those six pieces of technology, because when you look at the bare bones of it, robots can actually replace most of that functionality, and the cost is quite different as well.
Interesting. You know, this question may come off to our previous discussion, there's so much low-hanging fruit to automate in healthcare that we don't need this yet. But I was blown away at the UiPath user event that I went to when they demoed kind of a generative AI approach to automation. And the demo was the one where they said, you know, here, I'll use a health IT example. I need to go to the HIMSS conference, you know, create my travel plans. I was blown away that, you know, the automation using Gen AI to do that, you know, literally going to the HIMSS website. When is the HIMSS conference? What are the dates? Oh, it's in Orlando. Let's book the hotel in Orlando, and you need the flight from, you know, like, you know, that type of thing. You know, obviously I love it because it creates a new way of thinking about automation. Again, I don't know if healthcare is ready for that, but how do you see something like that applying to healthcare, where they literally are just generative AI requesting something and a bunch of actions happen?
Yep. I would say healthcare is absolutely ready for it, and they've been demanding it for many, many, many years.
Okay.
The question is what are the uses of it?
Okay.
And is it ethical? And when I mean ethical, is it giving me the outcome that's actually going to either improve a patient outcome or improve the way I do work? And that's really the important part of any technology. So there's a lot of other areas that organizations are looking at right now. The hyperscalers are looking at this technology. EMRs like Epic have technology built in that are doing this. And it's really solid and good. It falls under the same philosophy as, can I engage with a robot at the desktop instead of triggering robots? And, you know, it's the thing that everyone wants right now. Going back to chatbots, remember chatbots were a big thing a few years ago?
Yep.
When you ask an executive about what they want the most out of the chatbot, what they want out of the chatbot is exactly what you're talking about right now. So we're actually at the point of what people thought chatbots would really do for them. But what can we do with it, right? And that's where we talked about before, the experience is really what's important here. So where before automation was sort of in the background, you didn't know it was happening. You know, we have some people that would call automation by name, be like, well, Billy's on the background submitting all my appeals. Now they want to interact with the robots, and how that experience is for me is going to be very important. And what you saw in that demonstration was a user-based experience that allows you to optimize the uses of publicly available technology, internally available technology, with the guardrails of automation, and guardrails being the ability to learn, train, and most importantly, keep your information safe as it starts to use those technologies. And that being, I don't know if you saw that, that might be something that you saw, which is there's a trust layer, especially with UiPath, that if I am using an LLM to go out there on the HIBS website and look at that information, I can leverage the LLM to find it, but I'm not sending my information back into the LLM for the global world to get trained on. Mm-hmm. Those sort of aspects are really, when you talk to healthcare leaders and say you're ready for it, they say, I want it, but I'm worried, I'm concerned. So the reason why this is huge for us is we become the guardrail of AI technology, so we can embed it into experiences like you're saying. It could be in a conversational point of view, like you're saying. There's another demonstration we recently gave at several of our forums where we took a clinical document, uploaded it from, you know, an EMR, and then the robot looked at the document, the EMR, a website, as well as a patient directory. And then it was able to read through the document, and we were able to ask questions against it Are there any drug interactions? When was the last appointment? These things you're hearing out in the market right now, but the problem is those technologies are looking internal in that application it was meant for, right? We are looking at all the various applications that a user could be using on the computer and using that experience to pull it all together. So whereas you said, you know, build me a directory for HIMSS, but if you wanted to also look at, you know, information that's sitting in a spreadsheet on your desktop, if I want to also then include maybe my booking tool to be able to schedule appointments in my Outlook, right? Mm-hmm. These are various technologies. You can build those automations. And then as you start to type that out, the AI will know which automations need to be pulled into that framework. And then we'll start to ask you questions against that framework. So now you can immediately schedule those appointments inside your Outlook. Mm. Maybe, and then maybe fill out the spreadsheet so you can take it and walk with it when you go to the center. So there's this really cool orchestration you can now do at that really nice engaged experience. And that's ultimately what healthcare needs, because when we start to talk about patient-to-patient interaction, coming in intake, they're giving you a massive referral document. Maybe they're there in a surgery center. Those things are 67 pages. Can I become engaging and set appointments, triage them, do the memorandum, set up their appointments, set up the pharmacy real time in the middle of the conversation instead of doing 6 to 7 hours of data entry behind the scenes? Now I can do it real time and get the information I need to treat the patient when they walk in. Right. Mm-hmm. Do I need to do real-time financial planning for Medicare patients or Medicaid patients that come in and say they can't afford that surgery? Right. These are very high-end patient point of care problems where the clinicians send they need the help the most. And that goes beyond sort of the I need voice transcription, which I think is huge, and it's a different problem altogether. You know, that's a very data analytics voice capability problem. I'm just talking about the pure administrative work where I have a lot of documentation, a lot of charting, a lot of trend in front of me, and I need to make something of it as quick as possible and then produce an outcome that doesn't cause work for 20 different people over the next several days. So yeah. What you saw is just the beginning of that kind of experience that the technology can actually enable right now.
Yeah, I mean, two things stand out from what you said. One is kind of this mix of public data, you know, that's on a website or that's on some public forum, integrating that data with very private data, which is something in a spreadsheet or my calendar, right? I mean, mm-hmm. what's more private and intimate than your calendar, your email, which you mm-hmm. could integrate with. I think that, you know, merging the two, that I think that's the first thing that's really interesting and fascinating to think about. And then the second you said is kind of the interface. What does the interface look like to be able to tap into these, you know, automations and these processes? And to me, that's what Gen AI is kind of mm-hmm. opening up. Is there anything else about Gen AI, generative AI that maybe not enough people are talking about that, you know, they should be thinking about, you know, especially when it, you know, because I think this merging of Gen AI and automations is just such a fascinating approach that UiPath's yeah. taking.
Yeah, I think some of the things that is unique to UiPath, and this is stuff that we've shown at those user conferences, is can I accelerate automation, right? So now we're even using the construct of Gen AI to generate automations, right? Still not bots building bots. You don't want to do that from a compliance perspective, right? Mm-hmm. But could I have bots architect design for me to cut my development time, which was already really short manually, mm-hmm. to even a shorter period of time? And that's important as you start to get into aspects like test automation, right? You know, something broke in one of my EMRs. I want to create a test automation. Could I say, here's the problem, and then the robot pick that up and then use in an LLM, its history of UiPath and everything inside your current orchestrator to say, here's how the automation should be built out. You make a few tweaks, published, done. So those are really, again, we're focused on AI creating processes, not AI creating outcomes of data. So those are some interesting things that I don't think a lot of people might have took notice to or paid attention to when we did our user conferences, is actually the use of it to generate automation and code to accelerate that development timeline. Remember we said 300 to 400 in the beginning? Now, if I could do 20 to 30 a year, could I do 60 to 70 a year? And that's kind of what we're trying to do, is use these really nice AI, LLM technologies, not just to give better experiences, but actually produce more automations within a year.
Yeah. Well, it's the classic programmer problem. I'm a hack of a programmer, but I remember when I knew how to do the for loop and I didn't want to type it out. Everyone's had that experience. If you program, we're like, I know what this needs to be done. Why am I doing this monkey work? And now Gen AI is doing that. Give me a for loop. You're essentially doing the same thing. You know, these UIA path programmers, workflow automation people, they're like, I know how to do this. I don't want to go to the work to do it because it's monkey. You know, you're helping solve that problem similarly.
Yeah, but absolutely still keeping the ingenuity of the human in the place, because the human still has to architect how it gets designed. There's that concept of prompt engineering. Mm-hmm. So you still need to know the structure or the instructions to tell your new digital assistant to go build it for you.
Yeah.
Right.
And that it's stored in this system and it's stored here and you need to verify here. All of that has to be told.
Yeah, absolutely. So where it's a scary proposition, I think, for a lot of people saying my job's going to go away, in reality, we're seeing computer programmers becoming even more high in demand because they need to literally know how to sweet talk the LLM to produce something in a quick and enough time. And that will always be required, because as soon as you start letting a robot, an LLM, tell an LLM how to build something, that's when you start to get that degradation that everyone talks about, where it's a false positive, because it can take a negative and not learn from it, because it doesn't know, because the human is what makes that decision. So I see a lot of those roles actually becoming more important. And within the healthcare organization, we're seeing HIM leaders become technologists, right? We're seeing RCM leaders become automation centers of excellence leaders. So a lot of them are now having the ability to take these technologies into their actually business flow and actually create some unique entitlement and even some new skill sets to optimize these technologies where you just didn't see that before. And really generative AI is enabling that for sure.
And this kind of work pays a lot more than an RCM position. So that's pretty awesome. I love that.
Yep. Yep.
Jason, this was a fascinating discussion. I think we learned a lot and saw, you know, a lot of this AI is so high level. I love that you had some real practical examples of things that people are actually doing to automate it.
Yeah, I mean, I will always advocate on practicalness. I know everyone loves the art of possible. I always say let's focus on the science of practical, because definitely in healthcare, we want to innovate. We need to innovate. There's things we need to innovate around 100%. But there's just so much variation in the way that we deliver care to a patient that, you know, staying practical, focusing on the small to medium things that make a huge impact to our people inside the hospital, as well as to the patient, that we can accomplish in a very short period of time, I think is what every executive wants to do, because most of those big idea innovations take 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Right. So what can we accomplish this year? There's a lot. So I always advocate on the practical first.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking time to talk with us, Jason, and educate us on a lot of the ways we can increase automation in healthcare. And thanks everyone for watching and listening. If you want to find more great healthcare IT content like this, be sure to check it out at healthcareittoday.com or search for Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcasting application. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you for the audience.